Welcome to That Triathlon Show, the podcast presented by scientifictriathlon.com. My name is Michael Eriksson, and this is episode 4 of our beginner series. Over the last few episodes, we've talked about what triathlon is, how to select your first race, and the basic gear and equipment that you need to get started. And today we're diving into one of the most important topics that we'll cover on the series, which is how to structure your training and the key training principles you need to follow to train effectively, enjoyably, and to avoid setbacks. This is going to be all about practical advice to help you get fitter without getting overwhelmed. But one quick note that I think is important to highlight here at the top is that we won't be going into details of the specific workouts just yet. We will be covering specific suggestions and examples for structuring your overall week, but the specific workout examples will be coming up in coming episodes, not very far from this one. Before we dive into the main topic, big thanks to our sponsors, Precision Fuel and Hydration. They create carbohydrate products like gels, drink mix, and chews, and electrolyte products. And I've talked about this a few times already, but when you race, when you train as well, carbohydrates is the main fuel source you'll be using, and you have a limited supply of it in your body. So depending on how long you'll be out on the race course for, you may need to supplement with additional carbohydrate. And this ideally is carbohydrates that can be taken up quickly and effectively by the muscles. This probably doesn't apply if you're doing a 45-minute easy run or bike or a 30-minute swim. But if you're going to be racing for an hour and a half or something like that, then yeah, you probably should be supplementing with carbs. And the gels and drink mix is a great option for that. Electrolytes, on the other hand, are used to replace the salt that you lose when you sweat. And this becomes particularly important in longer events, but not necessarily longer in distance, but longer in terms of the time that you're out there for. And also when the conditions are harder, so you'll be sweating more and losing more sweat and losing more salt as a consequence. And electrolytes are important to avoid hyponatremia that you could get from overhydrating with pure water. As a TTS listener, you can get 15% off your first order of 2025 by using the code TTS25 on precisionfuelandhydration.com. Now let's start with the core principles of training. And the first principle is consistency. So in triathlon and in any endurance sport, consistent training beats sporadic bursts of crash training every time. So training a little, but often, will give you much better results than doing a huge training week followed by a week or two of very little training. It's also more sustainable, both psychologically, you're running a lower risk of burnout or losing motivation, and physically, so you're running a lower risk of injury, illness, etc. So improvement in triathlon and in any endurance sport is always built on a foundation of consistency. That's it. The second principle is that most training should be easy and some training hard. You might have heard of the 80-20 rule, which simply speaking says that about 80% of your training should be easy and 20% hard. This, you can argue the details of this. It isn't a strict formula, but it is a good guideline to follow. And hard workouts are for sure important for improvement, but they should not be used all the time. A lot of your training should be quite easy and comfortable. And one key skill to develop is your ability to gauge your effort here. And I talk about rating of perceived exertion or rate of perceived exertion a lot. So that's RPE. And this is a great way, in addition to any other data channel that you could have, like heart rate or pace, etc., just using your perceived exertion, your RPE, to gauge how hard you're working becomes critical, even from an early stage. So work on tuning into your body and learning what a hard effort actually feels like and what does an easy effort actually feels like. And they should actually be quite different. But this is coming back to the principle, most of the training easy, some of the training hard. That'll get you a long way already. Just knowing that you should do much less hard training than you're doing easy training is a good place to start. The third principle is the adaptation equation, that you could call it that. So stimulus plus recovery equals adaptation. Every training session is a stimulus, but the training itself isn't what drives adaptation. It isn't what drives you getting fitter. It is the adaptation that makes you fitter, and the adaptation only happens if you have sufficient recovery. So without recovery, your body cannot adapt, you cannot improve. Especially as a beginner, it's easy to overdo things. So you can very comfortably keep your training stimuli small and manageable. so that you are actually able to, your body is able to recover from them and reap the benefits. Because especially if you've been doing very little in terms of training, then even a pretty short and easy workout, it would be a fairly substantial stimulus for the body. So you don't need to do a lot. Chances are if you do a lot, no matter how much you try, you won't be able to recover and get the desired adaptation. Recovery doesn't come in a pill, it doesn't come in a shake or even in an ice bath. The recovery tools that you have at your disposal are sleep, nutrition, and hydration, sleep and overall rest, you could say, napping as well. So focus on building really good habits around these key things, and that is going to be 98-99% of your recovery comes from these variables: sleep plus resting, nutrition, and hydration. The next principle is specificity. So you get better at what you're training, and specifically at what you're training. So if you want to improve in triathlon, you need to swim, bike, and run regularly. This is especially important in your weakest discipline. So if you come from a cycling background, but you're pretty weak in swimming, then you might need to swim a bit more than somebody who comes from, or you definitely need to swim a bit more than somebody coming from a swimming background. A specificity isn't just limited to thinking about the three disciplines that comprise the triathlon event, but even going down to the level of detail of practicing in conditions similar to your race. So, for example, if your race will be riding your road bike outdoors on the road, then that's also pretty important to do in training. Because if you only ride on the indoor trainer, for example, or on a spin bike, and then you come to the race and you ride on a road bike outdoors, then yes, you have built the fitness, but you haven't necessarily, you've lost out on some of the specificity, both physically, but also technically, which we'll get to in a bit. In swimming, we have an interesting situation though, where for the majority of your training, pool training is better than open water training, even though the race happens in the open water. This is because swimming is such a technical discipline and the pool is just a better environment for improving your technique. But that being said, it is important to do some open water swim sessions before your race day to get comfortable in that environment, if at all possible. The next key principle is technique or a technique focus. So as a beginner, this is the best time for you to build good technique from the ground up. This applies to all three disciplines: swimming, cycling, and running. It even applies to strength training if you're starting to do strength training. But good technique in swimming, biking, and running, that makes you faster and it reduces injury risk. So it's something that will, the compound interest of improving your technique early on is massive as a triathlete. If you only focus on fitness, you're really focused on getting the volume in, getting your key intense sessions in to build your threshold, your VO2 max, all of that, then that can work very well in the short term, but eventually poor technique will limit your performance. And so prioritize technique early on, especially in swimming, but also in cycling, bike handling skills. You can, in a race, you can lose a lot of time on poor bike handling skills compared to somebody with good bike handling skills. So this is something to really keep in mind. And the beginner stages of your triathlon journey is a great time. It's the best time to start working on that. The next principle is individualization, which is true to a degree, but you don't need a highly customized training plan as a beginner necessarily. What you do need to do is you need to have some structure and you need to listen to your body. You need to also have some common sense, I think, but I think most people do have that. So you don't need to think about, am I a responder to ABC training or XYZ training? That's not really the level of individualization you need, because you will respond to all sensible training. You should probably consider some main factors, such as whether you have a background in swimming, cycling, or running. If you're a really strong cyclist, for example, but you really need to work on your swimming and running, then that's something to take into account in your schedule. Do a bit less cycling while you focus on swimming and running. You need to account for your work schedule or your life schedule, basically. So that's important to take into account from an individualization perspective. And your injury history, that's another important one. So if you have historically become injured quite easily when trying to run, then that's something that will also influence how you should train. So there is certainly a degree of individualization that you should adhere to. And as you go through any training program, you should think about your response to it and whether you should make any small adjustments based on individual factors. Basically, just pay attention to how your body responds and adjust accordingly, but you don't need to overthink individualization at all. The next, the penultimate principle here for today is progressive overload. So this simply means gradually increasing your training volume or intensity over time. Improvement doesn't happen by staying at the same level forever. You will keep improving for a while by doing the same training, but then at some point, this will stop happening and you will have to make some kind of progression, whether it's in volume or intensity, to keep improving. But don't make big jumps that your body isn't ready for, and don't overestimate how quickly you should overload. I think this is a common mistake. A lot of people think that progressive overload should happen week to week. I don't think that's the case at all. I think it's a much slower progress that, in the grand scheme of things, it takes years. But even in more of a medium-term focus, you can definitely keep the same training load for several weeks before you need to adjust things, and your body can keep adapting to the same load over multiple weeks, let's say a month or even 2 months. So be patient, build very gradually, and this will be more than enough for you to keep improving, but also to stay healthy, avoid burnout, lost motivation, and all of those bad things that come with doing too much too soon. And the final principle isn't necessarily a principle as much as it's important to understand the timelines of adaptation. So your performance on the race course depends on various systems within the body. Your cardiovascular fitness, for example, that is something that improves very quickly. Your blood volume can improve within a matter of days from starting consistent training, and other factors behind your cardiovascular fitness can also improve quite rapidly, your overall VO2 max, stroke volume, etc. Other factors, so especially things that relate to tendons, connective tissue, bone, all of those kinds of tissues take months to adapt in terms of how strong, durable, and resilient they are. And this is important to understand, because this is why you might feel that you're getting a lot fitter, and you are getting a lot fitter, and you should increase your volume, but your tendons and your connective tissue and your bone structures might not be ready for it. So the fitness that you're feeling, that you're building, is a true fitness game in certain systems, but it hasn't yet been reflected in other systems. So this is really important to consider when it comes to how you progress both your volume and your intensity. All right, so those were the key principles of training that I wanted to discuss. One note there that these are not all principles that you will find in a training textbook or physiology textbook or something like that. Some of them are, certainly, progressive overload, specificity, etc., are those sorts of principles. Others are more, let's call them practical principles that, you know, basically any coach would agree with, but principles that are important for you to understand from a practical perspective, even though they might not be the correct answer if you go and do a sports and exercise science test of some kind. So just wanted to give you that caveat. But now let's talk about the actual training structure. So this is maybe more the practical application of the training principles. Let's start with the microcycle. Typically for a microcycle is what we, or that the weekly structure would basically be what corresponds to a microcycle. A typical beginner triathlete week could look like simply 2 swims, 2 bikes, and 2 runs. Another very good option could be 3 swims, 1 bike, 1 run, and 1 brick workout, which is a bike followed by a run. So essentially 2 bikes and 2 runs and 3 swims. And we could structure this as follows. So Monday, rest. Tuesday, swim. Wednesday, brick workout. Thursday, swim. Friday, run. Saturday, swim. And Sunday, bike. And this gives you an idea. We're trying to spread out the disciplines a bit. If you already have a strong background in one of the disciplines or in endurance sports of some kind, let's say you come into triathlon from running, then you might already be ready to go for 3 workouts in each discipline. And this wouldn't be a problem because you're used to training consistently, training at a relatively decent volume and frequency. Of course, if you're going for 3 workouts of each discipline, that already does require doing a couple of double session days. So for example, swim in the morning, bike in the evening, or run in the evening. So that's to give you an idea of how the microcycle, how it might be structured at an ORU level. As I talked about in the training principles, most days of training should be easy. Some sessions can include some intensity, even if the overall day, the overall workout is easy. For example, a ride might be mostly at a low intensity, but include a few short sprints, and you might still consider that an easy ride. I think that's perfectly fair. I think in triathlon, and especially when you're not doing 12 workouts a week, you do end up having a lot of mixed workouts where you do a little bit of some kind of intensity, but overall the workout is easy, and that's totally fine. This is, yeah, we're trying to be practical here. We're not trying to follow rigid rules. So that's, I think when it comes to deciding what is easy, what is hard, it comes down to how do you perceive the workout to be at the end of the workout, or during the workout for that matter. But when you think back to the workout as a whole, did you perceive it to be easy or did you perceive it to be hard? Swimming, for example, is a great one, where very typically you would include some kind of short efforts at higher intensities in almost every swim that you're doing, especially if you're swimming, quote unquote, only twice per week. So even in swims that are predominantly technique focused, it would still be beneficial to include a few short and fast 25s, for example. But again, it comes down to, is the overall effort of the session, if you think about a scale from 1 to 10, then if the session feels like a 3 to 4 on a 1 to 10 scale, that's where most of your easy sessions should fall, in my opinion, and most hard sessions should fall in that 6 to 8 range. You should rarely go to a 9 or a 10. That's a bit too much. You can be more consistent if you stay at a 7 to 8 or even 6 to 8. So focus on these two buckets. Most of your workouts should feel like either a 3 to 4, and those are your easy days, or a 6 to 8, and those are your hard days or your hard workouts. So if we assume that you're training 6 times per week, let's say 2, 2, 2, then you could do 1 to 3 harder sessions per week, depending a bit on your background. If you have some background in endurance sports, you might be fine doing 3 harder sessions, 1 harder swim, 1 harder run, 1 harder bike. If you're completely new, then probably start with 1 or 2 harder sessions per week, and the rest of the days easy. Typically, the harder workouts are best done in the form of intervals, but you can also do some continuous tempos. We will cover the specifics of workout structure in the swim, bike, and run episodes coming up, so I won't go into that in detail now. Another principle thing to consider with the microcycle structure is to avoid stacking hard days back to back, or at the very least, let's say, spread out your hard days. For example, and there's a slight nuance there, more so when you're doing, let's say, 3 swims, 3 bikes, and 3 runs per week. But for the purposes of somebody doing 6 workouts per week, 2 plus 2 plus 2, avoid stacking your hard days back to back is basically equivalent. So for example, you could do an easy swim on Tuesday. So if we take that previous week that we already discussed as an example, rest day Monday, Tuesday, easy swim, Wednesday, harder brick with some intensity, Thursday, another easy swim, Friday, slightly longer, easy run, Saturday, hard swim, and Sunday, slightly longer, easy bike. So there you have 2 hard workouts, or 3 if you want to count the brick as 2, a run and a bike. And they're spread out to Thursday and Saturday, so you have the easier run on Friday between them, and not stacked one after another. So about double days, training twice per day, that is. This is something that absolutely it can work. It depends a bit on what your starting point is. When you're starting doing triathlon, if you come into triathlon from another endurance sport, you can be ready from it off the bat. And as you progress in triathlon over the years, it will become normal and even necessary to do double days to continue to improve. But that's down the line, especially if you're still very new to triathlon and endurance sports. If you're in that group of being very new to endurance sports and you're just starting out to build your training habits, I really strongly recommend just starting with one session per day until you've been comfortable with that routine for quite a while, and then stay with that routine for a little bit longer still before you start to introduce training twice a day on a couple of days, perhaps. Obviously not jumping to doing all days being twice a day, but 1 or 2 days a week as you start out, making it gradual. Now, we move up from the microcycle to the mesocycle, which is bigger training block. So you could define this as a four-week, well, you can define it however you like, but what I want to talk about when it comes to mesocycles is to do a few weeks of, let's say, load, and then followed by 1 week of relative deload. So a typical format and simple format that works well is doing 3 weeks of normal load, followed by one easier week or a so-called deload week. Doing a deload week or an easier week, it doesn't mean doing nothing and completely resting. It just means a slightly lower volume. It definitely means lower intensity. If your overall volume is already fairly low, then you might not even reduce volume at all, but you might just reduce or remove intensity, and that could be enough for your deload week. So it's not necessarily a dramatic shift. It really depends on what your load weeks look like. But for a beginner, it could be as simple as slightly reduce volume and removing the intensity that you have been doing in the load weeks and just doing easy training in that deload week. Moving up a further level to the macro cycle level, this is your big picture stuff, your training year, essentially. There are a couple of points I want to make here. It's important to every year have some time off, even though for long-term improvements, you want to, as much as possible, be consistent throughout almost all of the year. But that means almost all of the year and not exactly 52 weeks of the year. My general recommendation is to take 2 weeks every year that are fully off from swimming, biking, and running. You can still go out and do walks, hikes, do other stuff, play some racket sports or team sports, something that is fun, be active. That's okay, but full rest from structured triathlon training or structured training of any kind, really. And maybe after those full rest weeks, you can have a couple of weeks that are unstructured swim, bike, and run training, where just go and do what you feel like without following a structured plan. Doing these two things, that's a great way to reset both physically and mentally. And that's what will get you ready for continue to improve. Again, this is the part of the adaptation equation. Stimulus plus recovery equals adaptation. This happens at the micro level, on a daily level, on a weekly level, on a monthly level, and on a yearly level. So you need that recovery also on a yearly level. And planning downtime is just as important as planning your training in all of these levels. So yeah, at the macrocycle level, remember to take a bit of time off each year. And I recommend two full weeks off as a good general starting point. Now, when it comes to going back to the microcycle a bit here, what specifically should you do if you know that, okay, you're doing your, let's say, 6 workouts in a week? How do you distribute your time between the swims, the bikes, and the runs? So one point that is important to make is that for beginners, swimming can be quite important, not necessarily in terms of allocating total time, but allocating frequency of training. And this is important, but also challenging, because the swim can be logistically a bit more of a challenge because you have to get to a pool and so on. But because it is so technical, the frequency of training is much more important in swimming than it would be in a less technical sport. But it also means that you don't necessarily need to do longs, or you do not need long swim sessions to benefit. You can get a lot out of a 30-minute swim. For example, 3 30-minute swims would be much preferred to 45-minute swims on a weekly basis. You do the same total amount of volume, but you're doing 3 swims rather than 2 swims, and that's going to be better for your technical development. If you are in a lucky situation where you live or work close to a pool, then it could even make sense to do 4 short swims in a week, and especially if you're already pretty okay with cycling and running. So yeah, consider that when it comes to distributing your, not necessarily volume, but your frequency of training between disciplines, that the swim is where you stand to gain a lot as a beginner, especially. Cycling is a fantastic sport for building your general fitness. It can cross over quite well to running as well, and there's minimal injury risk, so at least from an overuse perspective. So it's possible to accumulate quite some training volume on the bike. You can do longer rides, and it's, again, nothing that is going to be very risky in terms of overuse injury. So cycling is a great sport to do quite a lot of volume from that perspective. Running is equally high reward, if not more high reward, for fitness building than cycling, but it does come with a much higher injury risk. So it needs to be managed quite carefully. And the less of a background you have in running, the more careful you need to be. And you need to be really respectful that the progression of your running should be very slow if you want to really minimize the risk of getting injured. This is where, if you're injury prone, you may really need to get some individual guidance for what to do, how to progress your running. Whereas if you're lucky enough to not be that injury prone, it's not necessarily a big problem. You can follow pretty generic guidelines and you'll be totally fine. So here you need to have a bit more knowledge about yourself or find out soon enough. But yeah, so in summary then, how, in practical terms, how should you distribute the volume as a typical beginner triathlete? I would suggest, as a starting point, doing 25 to 30% of your volume as swimming, 45 to 50% as cycling, and 25 to 30% as running. So if we take a training week where you'll do 5 total hours of training, for example, then you could do 2 hours, 15 minutes of cycling, 1 hour, 30 minutes of swimming, and 1 hour, 15 minutes of running. Now, what about how many times per week to train and how much total time per week you should train? My examples earlier already told you, I guess, some basic starting points. Ideally, you would shoot for twice per week per discipline as a minimal effective frequency, especially when it comes to learning and improving the skill-based parts of swimming, cycling, and running. It's hard to do that on just one weekly session. You can definitely improve your general fitness if you train, let's say, 4 times per week of endurance training, but you'll lose out quite a lot on improving the skills and the specific fitness within the disciplines, or in the disciplines that you only do once per week. So 2 workouts per discipline per week as a minimal effective frequency, I think, is a good starting point. But they don't have to be long sessions. Don't fall into the trap of thinking that if you don't have an hour, it's not worth training. A 20-minute run is still training in the bank. It's worth something. It contributes to the overall training load that results in adaptations to make you fitter. All of these, even small sessions, 20 minutes, 25 minutes, 30 minutes, 15 minutes, it all adds up over time. To give you some examples from my 8-week beginner plan to your first sprint triathlon, the first week of the plan has a total of 3 hours, 15 minutes of training time, and the biggest week has 5 hours, 15 minutes of training time. But throughout all of those 8 weeks, you're doing 6 days of training per week consistently. And I would bet a lot of money that if you could do a controlled study of one group of beginner athletes training on average 4, 4.5 hours per week, but doing it 6 days per week for 8 weeks every day, I would bet that they would improve significantly more than a second group matched for fitness at the start, but they would train 8 to 9 hours per week, but for 4 weeks. So the same total volume, but one group trains for 4 weeks. So let's say they start 4 weeks later, but do double the volume of the first group. It's just, you know, small volume, but consistently over time. At some point, you will have to gradually overload, yes, but for a long time, you'll be fine with quite low volume, just consistently week in, week out. If you're not used to regular training, 6 days a week, only 1 day without training, and you have a busy life that makes it hard for you to even think about this, which is a very normal position to come into triathlon from. Most people in the world do not do this. It's not normal. It can be done though. Here are some tips to be able to achieve this training consistency and frequency. And the first one is to aim for a consistent sleep schedule. Because a consistent sleep schedule that you stick to, it could allow you to get up earlier and squeeze in a morning workout when maybe in the past you were used to just waking up and rushing out, rushing to work, rushing to take the kids to school. There might be time there, but it could require some discipline with your sleep schedule. The second tip is to consider using your commute as training time. So biking and running could work depending on where you live and what the logistics allow, but that's a really good strategy. The third one is to use your lunch breaks for short sessions. Again, remembering that nothing is too short, really. Even 20 minutes is a good session in the bank. And finally, you could stack short workouts. For example, if you have 1 day that is a complete write-off, you can't do any training, then you could do 2 workouts the next day, but in a shorter time window, but doing something like a 30-minute swim followed by a 20-minute run, We talked about brick workouts a little bit. That's a very effective way to get in a bike and a run, even if they're both a bit shorter. So stacking short workouts can be quite effective as well. Now, a couple of loose points before we finish. First of all, strength training. We'll cover strength training in more detail in a later episode. I do want to note that a simple strength training routine can be beneficial as a beginner starting out, and it can be included in your training. Whether that's a bodyweight routine or going to the gym, lifting weights, that really depends a bit on your background with strength training specifically, and we'll get to that in the specific strength training episode. What I do want to say is that if triathlon is your primary objective and not building strength, then you don't have to spend a lot of time on strength training. 1 or 2 20-minute sessions per week will take you a long way. If you have unlimited time, then you can, of course, do a bit more. There's no issue there. But for most of us, time is in limited supply. So the goal with your strength training should then be to do as much as possible with as little as possible. It shouldn't be to just tick the box of doing several one-hour sessions in the gym. It should be to be efficient, effective, get much out of a little, and allow you to focus on swim, bike, and run training as per the specificity principle that we discussed earlier. So keep that in mind regarding strength training. Now, the other thing I wanted to touch on was, how do you know if you're improving? The aim of understanding these key training principles and the aim of understanding or of setting up a well-structured program is, at the end of the day, to improve your fitness and your race readiness and performance level. But how do you actually measure if you're improving other than just doing a race and then doing another race? There are a few methods that you can use. And the first one is that for beginners, very often it's very evident. So if you go from not being able to swim 50 meters to being able to do 200, 300 meters of continuous swimming without issue, then yeah, it's evident. You don't really have to measure things very, very specifically. The next level is to do subjective self-checks. So for example, you start to notice that you have an easier perception of effort, you're less out of breath during workouts, or you start to notice less soreness, feeling more energetic after workouts. These are all good signs that you're getting fitter, you're adapting to the training, it's not as hard for you. So all good signs that you're improving. And the third thing that you can do is to, and I do recommend doing this, is to record and log your training, and including the RPE for each workout, the rating on perceived exertion, how hard was it on a scale from 1 to 10, like we talked about. So I'm not even telling you to go and buy a GPS watch necessarily. You could do that, but it's not necessary. Let's say, for example, you have a standard 5-kilometer loop that you run. Then you could simply have an Excel spreadsheet, and after every run, note down your RPE for the loop, for the workout, and your time for this loop. And you'll probably be able to see this quite easily over a few weeks, a month or two, that your time is either coming down while RPE stays the same, or your time is the same, but RPE gets lower and lower. So you're running the same pace with less effort, or you're running faster with the same effort. The same can be done for cycling. Writing subjective comments after your workouts can also be really important, is really important, because this helps you reflect, compare, and notice progress over time. So I really strongly recommend that you do this right from the start in that same Excel spreadsheet that you just started. And finally, you can, of course, do periodic benchmark tests. Just make sure that the conditions are comparable with any testing. One good example would be that if you have a local park run, then you could do this same park run once per month and really try to go as fast as possible. And this would be a great way to track progress. If you want to do it in a very objective way, you can set up your own time trials for running, for cycling, and for swimming. And we'll talk a little bit about this in the specific episodes for swimming, biking, and running, respectively. But note that you don't necessarily have to do benchmark tests so much. It's more about whether you want to or not, because there are other ways to track your progress. So don't overtest, at least not if it stresses you out and makes you anxious and giving you a feeling that you have to pressure to perform, because that shouldn't be the point of doing any kind of benchmark testing. Let's finish off with some common mistakes when it comes to training principles and training structure that we've discussed. So the biggest one is just inconsistency, often caused by doing too much too soon. This leads to injury or burnout. It can also be caused by just not understanding or appreciating the importance of consistency, or by failing to structure good habits and routines in your daily life that allow you to be consistent. Another common mistake is doing every session at a medium hard or even hard effort. And as we talked about, you need that balance of mostly easy training and some hard training. And this is the right way to improve and minimize the risk of having any kind of setbacks. Next, we have many beginners fail to get the adaptation equation right. And this could be either by, well, the previous mistake was basically doing yet too much stimulus, so too hard training all the time. But the other side of the equation is not recovering enough. So this could be due to not sleeping enough, not having any rest days, no easier weeks, even not eating enough. So there are a number of things, but failure to make the adaptation equation work for you, basically. Next, we have not focusing on your technique, and especially swim technique is the obvious one, but also bike handling skills, and even to a lesser extent, there's some running technique that is beneficial to focus on. Remember that technical skills are hard to learn, but they are even harder to learn after you've ingrained poor habits. So really focus on technique in the early days. That's the best time to do that. And I want to come back to one thing that I also had put under consistency or inconsistency: ignoring early signs of injury or fatigue. Listen to early signs of injury and fatigue, and that's what will allow you to be consistent in the long run. If you, for example, notice that you have to take a couple of days off running because of a niggle, that's only a couple of days of running that you miss, but that's instead of maybe having weeks or months of time off running later on. So yeah, under the banner of consistency, don't ignore early signs of injury or fatigue. And the final mistake, this relates more to the training structure and actually putting things on paper into a training plan. Don't overthink things. This doesn't have to be too complicated. If you find yourself overthinking your plan, maybe just go out for a bike ride instead of spending all that time agonizing over details. Sometimes it's as simple as that. Spend that time training instead of planning. Don't do anything stupid, of course. But yeah, it really doesn't have to be complicated. So avoid that trap that many people do fall into. That's it for today's episode. I hope that you enjoyed it. You can find the show notes on scientifictriathlon.com/beginner4. That's the number 4. And in the next episode of this series, we'll talk specifically about swim training, including some example workout structures. If you have questions for that episode or feedback on this episode, please send them to me on email, michael@scientifictriathlon.com. That's Michael with a K. Or you can DM me on Instagram @scientifictriathlonhq. And if you're enjoying this beginner series, then please share it with a friend, share it in your local tri club or on social media. And also, if you could rate and review the podcast in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen, that helps a lot. Wherever you share it or whatever you do to help the podcast, I'm incredibly grateful for every little bit that you can do. So thank you so much if you're able to help spread the word about the podcast in some way. If you are interested in getting some professional help with your training, your racing, your overall fitness and performance, then check out our training plans and coaching services on scientifictriathlon.com. I also want to give a huge shout out to our team of amazing coaches. You might not be aware, but it's not just me coaching within Scientific Triathlon. We have a small but wise and powerful council of coaches, and we all learn from each other and complement each other. So if you're interested in coaching or a customized plan, then we have 6 different coaches to choose from with different strengths and characteristics, so which is great for an athlete deciding to work with us. Big thanks, finally, to our sponsors, Precision Fuel and Hydration, that you can find on precisionfuelandhydration.com. If you're looking for high-quality, practical, and tasty fueling and hydration products, make sure to try Precision Fuel and Hydration. Don't forget to take 15% off your first order with the code TTS25. Thank you, as always, for listening. Keep training smart and keep loving triathlon.